Wait till somebody else shows up who's interested, I guess. So, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 277, 280, 281, 282, and 284. All at the same time. Come on up. And start however you are going to choreograph this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee. My name is Carol Reeves. I am the board administrator for the Board of Accountancy, and I have just one or two very brief introductory remarks before my colleagues, members of the board, will present testimony on individual bills. In the written testimony that we provided for you, there is a buff-colored page and an orange-colored page. On the buff-colored page, may I direct your attention to the bullets at the bottom, particularly the last three bullets. These bullets point out changes in the profession that are the reason for the bills that are brought before you today. Some of these bills are the result of expanded services that are being requested of CPAs and public accountants in the profession that we need to change our regulatory rules in order to accommodate those changes. An example of this is the national movement to allow CPAs and PAs to receive or pay commissions for services, and that has to do with Senate Bill 282 and Senate Bill 20. I don't think we're hearing Senate Bill 282 today.
Mr. Chairman, the proponents of Senate Bill 20 and Ms. Reeves have told me that if Senate Bill 20 moves forward, that they will withdraw 282.
And that is correct. Another issue that has caused great changes in the profession is electronic commerce, which has forced the profession to address the question of licensees who practice across state lines, whether or not they have the appropriate license. We also have an increase in the number and the complexity of complaints and investigations that we must look into at the board office. And for that reason, we find it necessary to clarify the extent of our jurisdiction in to take disciplinary action.
What's generating the increased number of complaints? Are those from internally from your organization, or those outside citizen complaints?
Those are generally outside citizen complaints.
And why are we seeing an increase in complaints? Is there?
We see them based on activities that are new to accountants, to the public accounting fields, and there's a lot of confusion among the licensees and among the public about what is allowed. In fact, most of the complaints are coming from other licensees who believe that there may be activity going on that it is still prohibited.
What, by other licensees, you mean other accountants?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We also have more complex investigations than we've had in the past, and very frequently licensees feel that if they resign their license or simply do not renew their license, that they are able to avoid an investigation of their activities. And the purpose of our bill that you will hear today is to clarify that the board has the authority to continue an investigation of a complaint against a licensee, whether or not the licensee resigns his license or turns it in.
That would be Senate Bill 284?
Yes.
Thank you.
May I also direct your attention to the orange sheet toward the end? And this sheet includes some definitions of some terms that you will hear in the testimony today. They will be discussed in greater detail with respect to each bill. But for example, the 150-hour rule is a rule that went into effect in January 1, 2000, and it affects the requirements for becoming licensed as a certified public accountant in Oregon. Attest services are professional services that are provided by licensed certified public accountants and public accountants, and they are specifically defined services, and they are the bill on compilations addresses these services. Compilation is another term that will be addressed in that bill. Holding out is a term that is used when someone who is not properly licensed uses the CPA designation or an abbreviation of it to imply or indicate to the public that that person has the qualifications of a licensed certified public accountant or public accountant when they actually do not.
I have got to ask the question, how do you abbreviate CPA and make it seem that you are...
If they use the words certified public accountant or the abbreviation CPA.
Either one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The...
CPA.
You're right.
They abbreviate CPA, and I was wondering how they abbreviate that.
Substantial equivalency is a term that has been derived to indicate equivalency for the purposes of licensing eligibility across state lines. And there are specific standards of eligibility that have been established under the definition of substantial equivalency, and one of our bills has to do with this. So this definition may be helpful to you. Then we have also listed acronyms at the bottom. If there are any of those that are confusing, we'll be happy to expand upon them. At this time, I'd like to end my introductory remarks and let you proceed with whichever bill you'd like to call first.
Well, let's start at the top and talk about 277.
Mr. Chair, Senators, Senate Bill 277 amends six provisions in ORS 673.
Can you give your name for this, please?
Pardon me, Mr. Chair. I'm Alan Steiger. I am a licensed CPA. I am the representative of the CPAs in Business and Industry on the Oregon Board of Accountancy. I'm Director of Finance for ADEC in Newburgh, Oregon, and reside in Washington County. Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Senate Bill 277 amends six provisions in ORS 673 to define and clarify the standards which permit CPAs holding permits by another licensing jurisdiction and whose professional qualification requirements are substantially equivalent to Oregon's to practice public accounting in Oregon by filing notice with the board. Substantial equivalency will be determined by the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy. This facilitates the practice of public accounting across state lines without requiring the permit holder to obtain a certificate and permit to practice. Similar provisions are in place and will be adopted by other licensing jurisdictions, giving Oregon licensees similar provisions in those states. Individuals would be required to provide notice to the Oregon Board of their intent, agree to comply with Oregon rules and statutes, and to submit to the jurisdiction of the Oregon Board of Accountancy with regard to all services performed for Oregon clients. I'd be happy to address any questions you may have.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, and good afternoon. How much unlicensed practice is there currently in Oregon? Do we know?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, that's difficult to determine because they're not currently required to provide notice. So they could be coming across one of the border states from Washington, Idaho, California to perform some services for either an Oregon client or an Oregon subsidiary of a client in another state. So we really don't have a good handle on the amount of that that's taking place. This would clarify and define that for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. However, the intent is to reduce unlicensed practice and to protect the public. That's my understanding.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gorley, that is correct. We believe by having them register and submit themselves to the jurisdiction of the Oregon Board of Accountancy, we will be able to better protect the public.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Button.
I read the implication here that a person from, say, Washington could practice in Oregon perpetually if they pay the annual fee and meet the other standards. There's no, they can only do it for 6 months or something like that, isn't it? Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, the intent of the Board of Accountancy is to define the limit of the practice that would be permitted under this provision. Other states have taken the position it could be a percentage of revenue, could be a number of clients, it could be a number of different things, and the board has not yet finalized that which they intend to put into.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, go ahead.
Someone works for a large accounting firm in Seattle and is sent to the Portland office. They're going to be there a year, a year and a half. It's okay with this bill? I mean, it's happening now, but you now want to know they're there and have them under your jurisdiction.
Mr. Chair, if the individual's principal place of business is in Oregon, they will need to get a permit and a license in the state of Oregon.
If their principal place is not in Oregon?
If their principal place is in Oregon, they will need to obtain an Oregon permit and an Oregon license.
So that's where the rub comes as to what their principal place of business is.
Would it make sense to put in the statute a certain length of time if it's for a definition of permanent place of business or something like that to clarify it for the board?
Mr. Chair, principal place of business we feel may be only one of the items that we'll want to take a look at to determine whether they need to obtain a permit and a license within Oregon or whether they can just notify us under this provision. As I mentioned, other states have adopted a number of different levels of activity, and we'll need to take a look at that through the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy to see what's appropriate for Oregon.
I think that you're clear, but I'd like to have it on the record. You're talking about the board formulating administrative rules that would govern in this area instead of having it in the statute. Is that correct understanding?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, that is correct.
Thank you.
It seems to me that it would be much clearer if the statute gave the board some sort of direction as to what standards to use. This seems to be very confusing because it doesn't speak anywhere in this language that I can see that talks about principal place of business or time or anything else. And I'm concerned that if we don't define that and you at least set some sort of a goal for your rules to reach, that you will be back here 2 years from now saying, well, we need you to clarify the statute because our rule goes a little beyond what the statute says it can do. And it seems that if we're doing this now, it'd be the time to put those parameters in place.
Mr. Chair, one of the issues that Ms. Reeves brought up was the electronic commerce, electronic technology. And we feel in the future there will be more activity related to that where there is no physical place of business. And we need to be able to have the flexibility to address those situations as well, in addition to those that physically come into the state of Oregon.
That raises the question further in my mind, though, because we say where there is no physical place of business, but there, no matter what, a person has to have a physical place of business. In my understanding, you cannot be sitting nowhere and doing stuff electronically. There still has to be a physical place of business. And it seems that if at some place there needs to be a definition that if a person's physical place of business is in Oregon, he then has to go through the Oregon requirements. If it's not in Oregon and he's here temporarily, then this other method applies. But someplace we've got to get a handle on either physical place of business or here for a certain length of time, temporarily versus permanent. And I would think the physical place of business, because the temporary, if you define it by time, as you said, then you're dealing more with electronic issues. But if you would establish that a person whose physical place of business is here must be registered here permanently, seems to make sense to me.
Mr. Chair, if I may. The bill states that the board may authorize a holder of a license with a principal place of business in another state. I realize that's kind of a negative and backdoor way of going about it, but do you think that that is sufficient to establish the fact that the criteria is that they do not have a place of business in this state? And may I also express, Mr. Chair and members, this language is language that is provided by the Uniform Accountancy Act, which is a model act being adopted by all of the states on a piecemeal basis, the same way as we have been adopting it, in an effort to provide uniformity for the profession. That's not to say that we can't improve on the language if we deem that this is not quite adequate, but that is the reason that this language is as it is.
I think I've got it. Everyone either has a principal place of business in Oregon, or it's in another state. Already under the law, if their principal place of business is here, you've got them.
That's right, under another
state. They're doing accounting. No matter where else they are, you've still got them with this law.
I think I've got it. Okay. Okay, yeah, the principal place of business in another state, it is saying the negative of what I wanted to say, I guess, so that's...
And another provision, Mr. Chair, of the statute says that your requirement to be licensed is that one of the requirements is that you have a principal place of business here. So by putting those two together, okay, it kind of works.
Okay. Seems as clear as mud now to me. any other questions about Senate Bill 277? Anything else to add about Senate Bill 277? Let's move ahead. Senate Bill 280. No,
we've got them all.
We're all open.
Okay.
We're talking about all of them at the same time. I figured it was easier than having to open and reopen and restate names or anything else.
Sure.
Whenever you're ready. And we need to state a name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and Senators, my name is Dennis Donnelly. I'm a partner in Kosmatka Donnelly & Company in Medford. I'm here representing the Board of Accountancy. Senate Bill 280 removes compilation from the definition of attest services and maintains the requirement for licensees who provide compilation services to participate in a peer review program approved by the Board. Oregon Accountancy Law has adopted most of the generally accepted accounting standards. Accounting standards are promulgated by the Financial Accounting Standards Board, which is a national organization. In Oregon, compilation services are still defined as an attest service. And in the handout that we gave you, there is a definition of attest services. And basically, attest services are performed by licensees, and they express a conclusion about the reliability or fairness of the information that's been being reported on. Compilation services has been a source of confusion for licensees, other professionals, and the public ever since they've been instituted. Compilation and services are part of accounting and review services, which ended unaudited services for non-public entities. Unaudited services still exist for public entities. So if you're registered with the SEC, you give an opinion on the financial statements that could be unaudited, or you give an audited report. If you're talking about non-public entities, it's compilation and review or audits. compilation services in the state of Oregon are currently under attest services. Compilation reports express no assurance on the subject financial statements. The professional standards nationally have removed compilation services from attest services. The board requests your approval of this bill so that Oregon licensees will be subject to the same professional standards that govern all other jurisdictions. I'd be happy to field any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Looks like we're all significantly confused now on that one.
Mr. Chair, in order to help me understand exactly what we're doing and why we're needing to do it, it would help to have an example. So if you can provide an example in the real world.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Godley,
okay.
People who were previously licensees had to be part of an accounting firm, registered accounting firm, to provide attest services. With this change, licensees who work for such organizations as brokerages or American Express can perform compilation services outside of an accounting firm.
Clarify enough for you?
Yeah.
It provides more flexibility to licensees because now only attest services will be required to be performed in an accounting firm.
Mr. Chairman, what made it clear to me was when I came to the idea that to do attestation services, you had to be in a position of total independence.
Right.
But if you're doing CPA work for a corporation such as American Express, it cannot be independent. And that service then is being called compilation, and they're pulling it out where it now sits in the definition of attestation. They're just pulling it out and putting it elsewhere.
And people who perform, Senator, or Mr. Chairman and Senator Gardley, the licensees who will be working for, say, brokerage firms will give compilation reports, but if they're not in a position of independence, they're going to have to include that in their report, stating that they're not independent.
Okay. Let's talk about Senate Bill 281.
Mr. Chair, Alan Steiger again. Senate Bill 281 is a minor clarification of some language that was adopted 2 years ago where the licensees, particularly those outside the state of Oregon, felt it was unclear as to whether or not they had to register with the state of Oregon. The language that we had before was performs attestation services or holds itself out to clients or the public as a business organization engaged in the practice of public accountancy. What this bill does is to clarify it and make sure that these business organizations know that it's holding themselves out to clients in Oregon, or in this state as the language is, or performs attestation services in this state or in Oregon. Registration of those firms, of course, will provide that they're under the jurisdiction of the Oregon Board of Accountancy and will provide for the protection of the public.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
It's probably my only question of the afternoon, so answer it well, please. Most of the time, we get bills that are brought to us because of problems. are there problems with this in this area? Is this why we're doing this?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran. There was another change in the bill in the accounting law that became effective January 1, 2000, and it had to do with firm registrations. And because of that, we sent notice to all of our licensees so they would be aware of the change, a universal mailing. Many of those are out-of-state folks. There are folks in neighboring states, Oregon, Idaho, Washington, who have an Oregon license. They perform some services for Oregon clients. Maybe they moved there after living here. Maybe they had a client and found it necessary to get a license. But their firms were not registered. The individuals were licensed. So because of this mailing, we received many inquiries from all these Idaho firms, Washington firms. Well, gee, do we have to be registered now? You know, we got this CPA here, he does Oregon work. Does that mean we also have to be registered? We never had in the past. And so we suddenly became aware of a number of firms who have Oregon licensees, and they are performing services in Oregon under the letterhead of the firm. And so we felt it was necessary to clarify when the firm also had to be registered. So this is the reason a problem has arisen, only because they're asking the question, does this apply to us? And we feel it does.
But couldn't you, Mr. Chair, couldn't you have done that administratively?
Because the statute did not say in this state holding out to clients and as a CPA or performing professional services, it was implied that it's an Oregon statute that we're referring to Oregon. We just felt that it would be very clear. CPAs are people who tend to like to have things clarified, and we just felt it would be better to have it in the statute. Perhaps it could have been done by rule.
You know the difference between an extroverted CPA and an introverted CPA? An extroverted CPA looks at your shoes instead of his. Thank you. I just wonder why this couldn't have been done through administrative rule, why they had to come to us for seven niggling bills, or why it couldn't have been one bill is another question.
It will be one bill before we're done.
I've got it.
Okay, let's go on to 284. We're skipping 282.
Mr. Chair, Alan Steiger. Senate Bill 284 amends ORS 673 to allow the Board of Accountancy to maintain jurisdiction and take appropriate disciplinary action regardless of the expiration, lapse, or cancellation of a license by a licensee. Investigation of complaints may take some time, and a licensee may attempt to avoid sanctions by resigning and surrendering their license or allowing their license to expire. Senate Bill 284 allows the board to continue jurisdiction, continue the investigation, and take appropriate action. The board's policy to administer the law and administrative rules fairly and consistently is currently compromised if the licensee chooses to exclude themselves from board jurisdiction. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I guess I was wrong. I do have one more question now. Was there a problem here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, our Attorney General advised us that we should clarify our statute by including this. Apparently they have seen problems in other agencies with this. So this bill has been brought on the advice of our Assistant Attorney General. But excuse me, if I may go further, we have had folks surrender their license or not renew their license, and we have suspended an investigation because we weren't sure of our authority. So the situation has occurred in our office as well.
Mr. Chair, so you did have a live investigation going to cancel it because the person...
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, yes, that's true. We have.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, I've seen the same situation in other professions where the Attorney General is consistently telling agencies that you cannot continue an investigation of a licensee if they're no longer a licensee unless the law says you can. So
okay. This
is consistent with what I'm seeing elsewhere.
Thank God that's not standard in criminal law.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. If anyone else would like to testify on these bills, see Milton, we'll close the public hearing. Ms. Putman, it appears to me the Senate Bill 281, no, which one is it? Senate Bill, I just had it on top a second ago. Senate Bill 280 may be the correct vehicle to use.
Just combine them all up?
It is relating to accountants, and it has addressing all the statutes except for the one addressed in Senate Bill 284. But I would assume that was still fit.
Well, the relating clause ends at the semicolon, Mr. Chairman, so we don't have to worry about that. I think these bills and Senate Bill 20
will run as a separate bill.
Run that separate, yes, sir. I'd like to tell the committee that working with Mr. Polk, who testified on Senate Bill 80 and with 20, and Senator Gordley and Senator Deckard, I sent a request on behalf of the committee to Legislative Council requiring that the disclosure had to be in writing, the acknowledgement of the disclosure had to be in writing, and the disclosure had to be made before you were actually in business, made the referral, and so on. I got a call from Mr. Polk. He indicated that his brothers were to go further. Mr. Douglas indicated his brothers were to not go far enough, but they both agreed it was just right. That's what's happened, and we'll see that. We'll see that LC in a few more days.
Okay. Well, we'll put Senate Bill, what did I say, it was 280?
280.
Back on the schedule when we get an amendment that moves all these issues into that single bill. Okay, thank you very much. With that, we are done with accounting. I'm going to make sure they tell Representative Atkinson it wasn't as painful as you might have thought. Well, Senator Atkinson. Seeing how most of the committee is here now, committee members, we have been asked to submit.
That's the plan.
We've been asked to submit a work plan to the Senate President's office for the remainder of the next 2 months. We have submitted a work plan, but I would like, as chairman, to get your priority bills, if you have priorities in this committee, get them to me so I can. We have days down scheduled for, weeks down scheduled for committee priorities or member priorities. Make sure, I want to be very clear, though, just because it's your priority doesn't mean it's my priority, and it's still at my discretion to schedule the bill.
That would be a big duh, Mr. Chair.
Want to make that very clear.
Welcome to the process.
Okay, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2191.
So, Mr. Chair, you just want basically, we had this discussion at your desk. You basically just want to know the bills that we want to move, at least have a hearing on.
Yeah, I would like to know if there are certain bills in the committee that you would like to have a hearing on, and then we can talk about going beyond a hearing after that.
Okay.
Do we have a list? What do you think the total list of what's in the committee?
We do have a total list that's in the committee, and Mr. Putman will get a list to everyone's office of all the bills in the committee.
We're up to 183 senators.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Chair, then Mr. Putman, would you do those by, I mean, I've got my list. You're either going to have to do it by legislator as opposed to by number, or we bring our own list, one or the other, because otherwise I don't want to look through 192 bills.
Well, I guess he could give, how would it be?
Just give us our own bills if you want, I guess.
I think, fairly easily and quickly for you is, I'll give you a list of all the bills. I think you ought to have that.
Okay.
And I'll also give you a list where your name is either as a sponsor or at the request of all of those bills.
Sounds good.
Or, yeah, that works. Okay. Back to our hearing on House Bill 2191. Mr. Putman, when you're ready, you can present the bill to us.
Mr. Chairman, right now, there's a provision in the law as to what a landscape contractor can do, and it uses the phrase about the construction of fountains. But there are all kinds of water features that aren't fountains per se, ponds that fount or don't fount, waterfowl, waterfalls, et cetera. And they're simply broadening the term fountains to a more inclusive definition, ornamental water features.
Okay. Mr. Goodell, is it you today?
This one better fix that one again, okay.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I'm Ken Cudell. Today I'm the administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board, and this is your administrator put it very well. What we've got here is a very simple amendment, but one that needs to be made to clarify that landscape contractors can do the work on ornamental water features. And you can see from the bill, it also defines what an ornamental water feature is. It will take some confusion out of the issue as to who does water features. And we, at this point, there's obviously no fiscal impact. I know of no opposition to the bill, and we request your favorable consideration.
Thank you. My only concern is you list fountains, ponds, waterfalls, man-made streams, and other decorative water-related constructions as identified by board rule. Is this going to limit you in any way that by listing some of those that you're going to come back and expand that list at a later time, even though you have included other decorative water-related constructions?
Chair Beyer, what Legislative Council tells us that will do is make sure we don't have to come back to you if our public gets other sorts of things that we haven't listed in these. We felt that you would only be comfortable, and others would only be comfortable, if we somehow defined ornamental water features. So we have, I think, the basic feeling as to what they are, but there could be some other things that become popular with time and that we would want to define into that.
They can't leave waterfall, I don't know, ponds out of their definition, but they can add other things by rule.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so you have to define the things you list, but you can do more.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else?
Well,
your question?
Mr. Chair, just to establish some more information for the record, are there lots of contractors out there who want to do this work but are not doing the work because of the limited definition, scope of the problem? What is it?
Chair Beyer, Senator Gordley, the problem is that there are contractors doing the work, and technically they're not authorized to do the work. They're competent to do the work. They are doing the work. They're not quite creating any problems other than they're violating the law.
Okay.
That seems to be a problem.
I think we need to hear from the fountain lobby.
Don't, there probably is one.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Pay for the representation. Then
I'm sure there's a state association and government license.
Let's stay there. Bill, do you want to testify?
Probably have a song. This is going to be very short testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, and we just wanted to go on record in support of the legislation.
Thank you. Closed public hearing on House Bill 21, open work session. Unfortunately, seeing our House members, or House colleagues, we're not combining some of these issues. We're going to have to run our bill count up now.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2191 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Harper moves House Bill 2191 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion? Objections? So ordered.
I'd be happy to carry that puppy.
Senator Harper will be the carrier.
Ground the puppy when you're out there. In a water feature.
Okay, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 20, or House Bill 2194. Mr. Fidel. Whenever you're ready. Oh, wait, Bill. Let's put it, Mr.
I'm caught up.
Okay. You want to present the bill to us, or just let Mr. Fidel dive right in?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, as Julie Bear said, this is deja vu all over again.
I thought that.
Here's another agency coming in and saying we've got to get at the limited liability companies and limited liability partnerships. Since the last time we dealt with discipline, those business structures didn't exist.
So I think we've seen this before as construction, under the Construction Contractors Board.
Yes, sir.
I guess my first comment would be I would like to probably see the same amendment we had put into that bill that allows them to continue work with a light if they work on a repayment schedule if they owe back money.
Chair Blyer, I'm Ken Cudell, administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. This bill's a little broader than the bill that you heard the bill that you are speaking to is Senate Bill 320, and it dealt with only the one part of this, actually the amendment on page one of this bill as it affected Construction Contractors Board. This bill does, just as Administrator Putman had indicated, and so the amendments on page one, line 18 to 21, and lines 29 to 30, and then on page two, lines 33 to 35, they don't do anything, give us any more authority. They just allow us to do the same thing with landscape, with the disciplining limited liability companies and limited partnerships. And it also adds the same language that we asked for before, that again, if somebody comes up with a new entity, we're going to have to come back to you and ask for permission to discipline them. This has the language for the board to define that also. It also contains some new authorities, and you need to be aware of that. On page 1, line 25 and 26, allows the board to discipline it somebody who owes money to the surety company. The surety company's paid money out. They've not paid the surety company back. And this would allow us to say, no, you can't renew your license or you can't be licensed until you pay back the surety company. Lines 27 to 28 allows the, on page 1, allows the board to say no to a license of somebody who's already had their license taken away in say, this, another state by similar landscape contracting agency of that state. And on page 2, actually it's line 24 and 25 on page 2, allows the board failure to comply with the statutes of 279, which is basically wage laws. So if somebody has been convicted of violating those laws and owes a penalty there, a civil penalty, or owes some money payback, we would take away their license until that was paid. Those are the changes. Those are the combination of things in this bill.
Mr. Putman.
Mr. Cudell, I think the chair's question was, can the board take into account positively or negatively a person being in the business of correcting or paying back these monies?
Yes, sir. Senator Beyer, again, the term, in looking at page 1, line 18, the board may suspend, and I've always interpreted may to be something that we can do. We would not do it if they're paying back the money, because that's what the whole thing is about. So if they owe some money and they're making payment.
Well, in the other bill, the issue was that we wanted it as a matter of law that the board could fail to be lenient if they wanted to be, didn't want to be lenient, by making it clear legislative intent was that if you're not paying back, that in and of itself is a reason for punishment. didn't say that, but it certainly gave the legislative intent in 320. And I think the chair's question was, why not put that in here too?
I have no problem with that. I'm not sure where it goes in this now because I don't have 320 in front of me.
Yeah, council can figure that out, but yeah.
Yes, that's correct. And I don't recall it. Did 320, did it say the board may suspend there too, or was it all?
Yes, the language was the same before.
Yes.
So it was permissive.
It is permissive, but we, and council said, well, they can do that now, to which my response on behalf of the committee was, we want it right in the law that this absolutely is something they can take into account. No doubt about it.
Okay, yeah, and I would like to see that in this bill also, okay. Just to make it clear that to the people, I guess maybe clear to the licensees or clear to the licensees that there is a remedy as long as they are following a repayment schedule that they, their license will not be suspended. But if they fail to follow that repayment schedule, then in fact their license will be suspended. So with that, does anybody else sign up to testify on this bill?
No, just those two.
Okay. Just those two, was Bill signed up?
Well, no.
Where did I put it? I just do right
I'm
here.
Kidding it. 2190.
Bill, do you want to testify in this one? I don't know why you left.
Well, you might ask me a question. Bill Cross, the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, committee members and chair, we are also in support of this proposed legislation and the conceptual amendment that you were just discussing. We would support that as well.
When you say the word conceptual amendment, we'll have Judy Hall running through that door. And
Secretary, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 2194 and ask Mr. Putman to go to Legislative Council and have the amendment drafted, and we'll put it back on the schedule when we get the amendment. I'll open a public hearing on Bill 2195. Mr. Putman.
Mr. Chairman, there are people who design landscapes who don't, in fact, do the contracting work. Now, as I understand it, there are also people who contract who also do designing, but that's a different matter. And what this does is, if all you're doing is designing, unless you're on a slope of more than 10 degrees or there are various watershed issues, and there's one other item, I forget what it is, that you can design but not install a landscaping feature. That's my understanding.
Okay. Go ahead, Ken.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, and Ken Cudell, Administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. This bill does, if it isn't passed, does create a fiscal impact on this, and I never thought of fiscal impact in that way. But right now, ORS 671.5.520 contains the term plan and install. We don't want to remove the term plan from that definition, but we've got, as a result of somebody filing a complaint with the board, the Attorney General gave us an opinion that says, yes, you should be regulating those who just plan. So we've got people out there who call themselves landscape designers. And I have no record of landscape designers creating problems for the consumer. So I'm stuck with the dilemma of asking for additional spending authority to regulate people that the law says I'm supposed to regulate or that we're supposed to regulate, and it will cost some money, but I don't have any evidence that the consumer is being harmed by those people.
Where in the current law say plan and design?
675.520 is a definition of a landscape contractor. Is
different. Yeah. Different section of law.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not in it where it is here.
Okay.
So, and you want to separate this bill from another bill that you may hear at some future date, and that's House Bill 2196, which is the landscape architect bill. Well, we worked with them to get a definition of landscape designer the two bills can stand separately, and this bill doesn't depend upon the passage of 2196. I have in my prepared testimony that there is no opposition to this bill. However, there is a lady here that's going to testify in opposition to it, and before she testifies, I just want to make it clear that the two bills are not tied together. This is a bill that would exempt those who do landscape design work under certain conditions, very restricted conditions. And it also allows, in the way we defined that in the bill itself, 2195, line 22 of page 2 of that bill, page 2, line 22, it reads, a person other than a landscape contractor using the title landscape designer in connection with making conceptual plans or drawings for the selection, general placement, or use of plants and other site features, provided the person clearly notes on all contracts for services, plans, and drawings that implementation of or consultation about the implementation of the plans or drawings may require the services of a professional authorized by law to perform the implementation or offer the consultation. So what it basically is saying is I don't have a license, not saying it in those words, but I'm giving you this conceptual plan for your landscape. It may require the use of an engineer or an architect or a landscape architect or a geologist even maybe. So a disclaimer put on there by the landscape designers. So we're asking that you pass this bill that would exempt landscape designers. First, it defines what a landscape designer is, and then we exempt them from having to be licensed by the Landscape Contractors Board. It doesn't restrict current landscape contractors in any way. They can continue to do the same thing they've done. And landscape contractors today design some landscape projects that they don't construct. They construct some projects that other people design. By their license today, they can design, they can construct, or they can do both. And this doesn't restrict them in any way.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. Mr. Cudell, why should a consumer not be concerned about removing regulation?
Chair Beyer, Senator Gordley, I've been the administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board since 1987, and I've yet to get a complaint about landscape design. And we haven't enforced landscape design from the standpoint of we don't enforce that, but the complaints would come to us, and I don't have any evidence to show that consumers are being harmed. Actually, this bill puts some restriction on them, so it does regulate them somewhat more than what they're being regulated today, and because it does say that they don't have to be licensed if they restrict themselves to this very narrow area.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How did you come up with this area? I mean, of these 11 A and B, what criteria did you use to come up with these?
This was in conjunction, Chair Beyer, this was in conjunction with the landscape architects in arriving at this. Our board has a landscape architect on the board. He also is a licensed landscape contractor. And then we've met several times with the Landscape Architect Board restrict. We didn't want to get into their area at all, and we wanted to have something that if either bill passed that we would have, or both bills passed, we weren't one conflicting with the other. So that's how we arrived at this. But basically, it's area that doesn't require special knowledge other than landscape design, in other words, conceptual. Landscape designers, by and large, they're knowledgeable about plants, but they also have this, the good ones have this artist characteristic about them, and that's what you're buying when you buy landscape designer services. And so if the restrictions here in 11, section 11 of that bill, line 14 through line 21 on page 2 of the bill are to make sure they're not getting into an area where you may make it look good, but you're going to create some problems for the owner or for the public downstream.
Other questions? Ms. Putman.
Well, I'll wait till Liz Francis talks.
Okay. Bill, do you want to comment? Just kind of Bill also.
Good bill should pass.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross, representing the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. Again, we've reviewed the proposed legislation and support its passage.
Okay. Liz Francis?
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record and begin whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer. My name is Liz Francis, and I have a business called The Garden Angels and Urban Watershed Designs, and it is operating out of Salem. And my address is P.O. Box 3313, Salem, Oregon. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. I am in opposition to the bill. I believe that the bill is not necessary and it does not benefit the consumer. The bill actually, I believe, threatens my state licensed landscape business because I choose to offer independent landscape design services, and that is a significant portion of my revenue. And so that's a significant piece of the work I do. I think that this has the potential to confuse the public because it makes a special distinction for landscape designers. And I answer the question, are you a landscape designer and landscape contractor, with yes. So I went to a tremendous amount of my life to qualify to become a landscape contractor. I went through a lengthy internship and did enroll at U of O. I'm a mother of a teenager and found it difficult to commute to Eugene to continue my studies in landscape architecture, and needed to put food on the table, so becoming a landscape contractor seemed like a good alternative for me. When I decided to go into this field, having come out of construction, I knew that it was important to obtain licensing to hang out my shingle, as it were. So I contacted the board in 1994 and found out that what I needed to do to obtain a license so that I could perform landscape design services to the public. And then this last year did pass the examination and feel that I have a very good feel for what landscape construction is all about and landscape design. I prefer to spend the majority of my time in the field of landscape design. However, I have installed landscapes. I feel that there is some confusion that's established by making a distinction for landscape designers. I think that it could potentially drive up the cost of the service because I can't believe that any of the clients I work with, if they saw on a proposal a statement regarding the fact that you might need to hire somebody else to get this job done, I can't believe that the consumer would come to the conclusion that they would buy that service. If I need to hire a landscape architect to achieve this, that makes my costs go up. I believe that it is not clear in the bill as it stands what happens to landscape designers if they're excluded from the current bill, from the current code. I don't see that House Bill 2195 really deals with landscape designers if it excludes them. It doesn't say who then has authority over them. So if 2195 does pass, but 2196 does not, then nobody has authority over them, or that's the way I'm reading it, and I'm not a lawyer.
That's a good thing.
So I was interested in bringing my point of view to you today. I understand that the both associations that I am a member of, which is Landscape Contractors Association, and the ANLD, which is Landscape Designers Association, are in support of this. I really feel like, to a certain extent, this was all as a result of one claim. And as you heard before, this doesn't seem to be a matter of public outcry at this point. It's a matter of enforcement, and I think we had a good law. I certainly took the steps I needed to in my own life to get qualified enough to pass the examination and proceeded with what I was told to do. And I have a hard time understanding why other landscape designers don't take the same route. But yet now we find ourselves in a position where the landscape designers are getting special treatment and now being, you know, separated out, and ultimately will have to fall under this landscape architecture legislation and put this mark on their drawing that says that, you know, my drawing isn't worth anything, essentially. And I personally have to say, after working in the field, that it's very rare for me to have a circumstance where I'm called to someone's home and I'm only doing planting plans. It's always about constructible environments. It's always about something to do with soil, drainage, irrigation, things that need to be specified, and things that really should have a license. So I can't believe that that happens after all the time I've been doing this, that people just need a planting plan or just need a concept. It's very hard not to specify something else.
That's true. Ma'am, could you tell us what you know about the one contested case?
I only know that there was one contested case. That's all I know. I have gone to two meetings of the Landscape Contractors Board, and I've been trying to get some copies of minutes of meetings. I tend to be a very busy person and wasn't able to attend all of the board meetings to hear. But I don't know anything other than there was a claim, and it was one claim.
You don't know, Mr. Chair, you don't know what the, just in general, what the issue was? I mean, was there a complainant who said that the person didn't complete the terms of the contract? Was it somebody did something that actually did harm to the consumer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a conversation with a gentleman who's a landscape contractor this afternoon, who used to be on the Landscape Contractors Board, who was there when the claim came in. And I asked him that question today. I asked him, where did the complaint come from? Was it from another contractor? Was it from a landscape designer? Or was it from the public? And he couldn't answer that question. So I think there's been several months, in fact, maybe even over a year's worth of discussion about this issue, and there's been quite a bit of back and forth, and I don't know. That may be, in fact, a loss. You'd have to ask Mr. Cadell.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you testify in opposition in the House, or is this the first time?
I honestly had been trying to get some information about where this was for a couple of weeks, and I didn't hear until just yesterday afternoon from Mr. Cross. So, and it's as a result of my, you know, not getting to the last board meeting, I think, in January.
Okay. Cam, you can back up and you can stay there.
Okay.
Unless you don't want to sit by him. Ken, can you enlighten us at all on this one case at one complaint?
Chair Beyer, Ken Cudell, Administrator of Landscape Contractors Board. The case was an enforcement case, and it was a case brought by somebody who was a landscape design or licensed landscape contractor who said, here is somebody doing landscape design work. They don't have a license. Landscape Contractors Board, you got to stop them from doing this. We believe that we didn't have to do that, we weren't going to be regulating landscape design. The individual persisted, and so we asked our Attorney General for advice, and they gave us advice that was different than we thought we were going to get. And basically it said, you're supposed to enforce landscape design. The words are pretty clear. Plan and install, or any part thereof. And so plan is design. And so that's how we started on this issue of requiring and enforcing and requiring everybody who does landscape design to be a licensed landscape contractor. And the board chose at this point, because we had never received any complaints from people about landscape design, the board chose to seek the route of exempting landscape designers.
Wouldn't potentially an easier way to do that would be to go into 671.520 and take the word plan out?
Chair Beyer, if you took the word plan out, then you would remove the ability of landscape contractors to plan. And landscape contractors, there are those who would say that landscape contractors shouldn't have the ability or shouldn't be licensed to do design unless they're actually going to do the construction. But the law allows that. And if you took the word plan out, it wouldn't even allow them to do any planning, even on the jobs they were going to construct.
Okay.
Well, there are a couple of issues here that I'm not too clear on, if I might, Chair Beyer. Liz Francis would not have to put this disclaimer on her papers. There's nothing that she's going to have to add as a result of this bill. She can call herself a landscape designer if she wishes and still not have to put that disclaimer on there. If you look at the language on the wrong one.
Well, no.
The language on the last page of the bill. Line 22 on page 2 of House Bill 2195. I think that Ms. Francis does have a challenge for House Bill 2196, but not for this, because in this case, it said a person other than a licensed landscape contractor using the title landscape designer. So she would. This is not going to have any impact upon how she operates if this bill passes.
You're shaking your head yes.
That's what I've been told since the beginning of this, and I do believe that I am protected by law. But in the marketplace, when you create a situation of confusion, because you have some landscape designers that have to put a stamp on their drawing, and then there's me, you know, there's already a lot of confusion about who does landscape design in the marketplace. So I think it's more clear to have either a licensed landscape designer who has to pass a test under the landscape contracting law to show minimum competency in the field, or you become a landscape architect. So I think the law is very clear now. And to set another category, or, well, in the special case that you're a landscape designer and you don't want to take the test, you can, like Ken said, have this very narrow field of approach and stamp your drawing, put a proposal in someone's hand that says, you know, my drawing is very conceptual, it's only about plants, and you might need to consult somebody else, is going to create confusion, and that could have the potential where people are talking to each other and saying, well, you know, if you have a landscape designer, you're still going to need a landscape architect. So that affects my business. If I'm calling myself a landscape designer and performing that service, and enough people discuss that kind of thing, that can really convolute the whole issue. And people don't spend enough time researching as consumers, I believe, what their rights are, what they should be buying. And if there's any hint of confusion or what have you, they'll be calling a landscape architect, and then we'll lose that business.
So if number 12 was not in the bill, so if it just talked about what a person who is a landscape contractor can do without having the exception for a person who's not a landscape contractor, would that solve your problems with the bill? Or is that, because the way I read it, number 11 tells in the law says what a licensed landscape contractor can design. Is that right, Mr. Goodell?
That's correct.
Chair Boyer. I think...
They can't.
Everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. They can do everything that's not listed in A or B. But number 12 says that people who aren't licensed can do more than that, but they can't go out and say it, or they have to stamp it.
Unless they're also a contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think that would get at your problems?
Chair Beyer, thank you for the question. No, I think that the law as it stands right now is clear enough, and any other additional language is not necessary. In fact, it's confusing just trying to understand this as it stands right now.
Are there any limitations now, Ken, on what a landscape contractor can design or can't design?
Chair Beyer, there's no restrictions other than they might get into the area of designing a retaining wall or something that met engineering or architectural or code, and then they would be restricted by that. But there is no restriction other than that, which already exists. If I'm a retaining wall above a given height requires an engineer design on it, for instance, there are other things that would require an architect or an engineer or a geologist to get involved, and those restrictions are there on landscape businesses today, and this doesn't change that. The landscape designers that we've had contact with that are in the business of landscape design are in favor of this bill. We've worked out the language with them. The landscape architects are in favor of the bill. We've worked out the language with them. I respect where Ms. Francis is coming from, but she would want us to require all the landscape designers to become licensed with the Landscape Contractors Board. The law now says I have to do that, but I have no justification in the form of protecting the consumer. If you're going to base protecting the consumer upon a history of problems, then we don't have a history of problems. So we're trying to fix this without having further impact upon any businesses.
Okay. Thank you very much for bringing this forward and for coming in today and voicing your concerns. Ken, where is
2196.
Where is 2196?
It has a hearing, I think, on the 6th. Do you recall when the date is? I think it's on the 6th. It's in your counterpart in the on the House side, and I think it has its first hearing.
March 1st.
March 1st, then. Okay.
Next week. Okay. Thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2195, and Paul, I'm going to go on and digest this in a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
And maybe see it in the context as it relates, if the other bill gets here, have the two kind of mesh together somewhat more. I'm a little confused yet with who and what's what and who's on first and what's on second.
Although I have to say Ms. Kelly's credibility was elevated very high in my mind with the pun that she uses for her name, Garden Angels. I have to say that was good. I didn't miss that.
Okay. Well, I think we've gone through our agenda. There's nothing else.
Oh, let's just stay for a while.
We can hang out for a little while.
Yeah. It'll be Saturday soon.
Thank you, committee members, and adjourn.